Welcome to Ambleside Flourish, brought to you by Ambleside Schools International. This is our four-part series on bringing up joyful children with Dr. Bill St. Cyr, Executive Director of Ambleside Schools International, hosted by Ambleside Schools of Colorado. Part 4, Additional Skills of Joy.
Skill 1, the capacity for shared joy. Skill 2, the capacity to delight in the good, true, and beautiful. Skill 3, the habit of sweet thoughts. Skill 4, the capacity to handle the 6 painful emotions well. So if you're human, as we go through life, every human experiences the 6 painful emotions. And they are sadness, fear, shame, despair, disgust, anger. I think I named all 6 of them there. Sure. Anger, sadness, fear, despair, disgust, shame. So when we experience one of those, it doesn't matter what culture you grew up in, same facial expression. So we can take pictures of people from any culture, any tribe, any time, and you can recognize when someone's afraid, when someone's experiencing shame, when someone's experiencing sadness or despair. If you're human, you experience these. Now, the art of it is, and in life you will experience these, right? The question is, can we experience those and not cease to be our best and true selves? In other words, can I be sad and not be kicked into the back of my brain? Neurologically, the right way this works is there's a part of the brain called, we've got 2 of them, cingulate gyri. They're cingulate, there's the left and the right cingulate gyrus. They run from behind the eyes to the back of the brain. They're shaped like a banana. And they run one level below the cerebral cortex, the kind of at the top of the limbic system. And it seems that in most people, the right cingulate gyri, that the banana in your brain, it is what regulates these emotions. And that as long, so if we put you on a brain scan, and let's say you're experiencing more sadness than you know how to do well, because we could all say we all have a capacity, we can all do a certain amount of sadness before we start to get in trouble. And what trouble looks like is the frontal lobes go black and you get kicked into the back of your brain. So the more trouble the right cingulate gyrus has processing one of these 6 painful emotions, the less our true identity centers, the executive functions of the frontal lobes are actually going to be working. So that if you actually did a brain scan with someone who's banana was glowing bright red, which means it's sucking up oxygen because it can't handle all that it's supposed to be trying to do. It can't handle the distress it's experiencing. The frontal lobes look totally black. It looks like you've had it's the brain scan of someone who's had a frontal lobotomy, which explains a lot. Because, you know, maybe someone you know, you love, maybe yourself, has turned into a puddle of goo on the floor. Because you've gotten kind of more emotional distress than you know how to handle well. Nobody raised their hand and say, gee, I want to be a puddle of goo on the floor. You know, what happened was you got into more distress than your brain, than your banana knew how to handle. And so your true identity center shut down. You were kicked to the back of the brain. And you only knew how to do back of the brain only knows how to do 3 things: fight, flight, freeze. You know, and so that's all you were left with. And so suddenly your spouse is wondering, who is this crazy person? This is not the person I married, or mom or dad, or who is this crazy person? This is not the child that we like have loved and grown. Well, literally they're not, because literally their frontal lobes are all shut down, and they're in the back of their brain. And you know, if you, best thing to do, create a safe space, don't try to, The worst thing, like when your child's a puddle of goo, the worst thing you can say is, why are you doing this? Don't you know? No, nobody's at home. The elevator is not running to the top. Right? So when that happens, that's a sure sign that the sadness, the fear, the anxiety, the hopeless despair, the shame got bigger than I knew how to handle. Nobody volunteered. Nobody said, that's what I want to do. It was not a bad choice. It was overwhelmed because my capacity was less than the size of the pain that life threw at me. So part of a joyful existence is learning how to increase our capacity with those six painful emotions so that we do them well. So, you know, we're not going to raise hands or anything, but we could take each of the six and kind of give ourselves a number between 1 and 10. How well, precisely, do I do sad? I mean, can I do a lot of sad and still stay my best self? Still stay relational? Still say, you know, frontal lobes fully working so I can connect with you and we can share sad and we can love one another in the middle of sad? I actually do sad very well. I really do sad very well. Yeah, it's one of the, because my mom did sad very well. So I learned how to do sad very well from her. Shame, not so much. I've been working on shame for a long time. In fact, as a culture, like the whole culture, doesn't do shame well. Shame's actually a gift. It's a good thing. You know, the clinical definition of sociopaths are people that don't feel shame. You want the capacity to feel shame. You just want the capacity to feel shame well. Because what shame is, gosh, I was not my best self there. I was not my true self who God made me to be. I'm going to get it next time. But because we don't do shame well, a little shame comes on us, and we feel like, oh, I'm the slime of the earth. Everybody hates me. Nobody likes me. Think I'll eat a worm. You know, kind of deal. And then we get angry, right? Because nobody wants to be like the rejected, despised one. And so sometimes, because if you don't do shame well at all, because like in your home you grew up, nobody in that household did shame, and everybody used shame as a weapon, so that now like, then any little shame can feel like a really big deal. And so that you then get a whole culture that says you're never supposed to do anything that makes someone feel a little bit of shame. Actually, that would be pathological. No, you need to be able to feel shame. You just need to be able to feel it in a healthy way. Just like you need to be able to do sadness, anger. Anger is another great one, right? You know, Jesus was angry. But here's the deal. Whenever Jesus was angry, he was not in the back of his brain. Like, he was still had the joy centers up and, you know. Because what anger is, when it's healthy, is the strong protector coming out. It's like, you know, have a birthday party and take, and if there are six girls in the class, and you pull up and take five of them and leave one girl sitting on the sidewalk by herself while she watches every other girl go to a party by herself, you would see me angry. You would witness the strong protector coming out. You will not do this to one of our girls. See, that's what Jesus is doing when he's angry. It's the strong protector coming out. It's not that he's been kicked in the back of his brain and he can't handle it and he's on the board or, you know, and he's melting down. You can actually feel shame and joy at the same time. You can feel anger and joy. But it takes a certain maturity, and you got to be able to do them well. So that's the skill. That is the fourth skill. And the fifth skill is related. It's the capacity to return to joy. So if you, here's a good metric. In this world, you experience distress, tribulation. How long does it take you to get from distress back to joy? If you experience a little distress, does that kind of spin you down so that you're lying awake all night and you've got all these rapid thoughts damning everybody you can think to damn? Mm-hmm. Is that the way it goes? Or you can experience distress, you process it well, you get... Now, obviously, it's going to depend on a function of the size of the distress. But ideally, our capacity to experience larger and larger amounts of distress and get back to joy relatively quickly is growing. And we're building that into our children. Wouldn't it be nice if our sons and daughters, our students, could step into a situation in which they experienced a lot of distress and rather quickly got back to joy, peace. Perhaps you know some people that can do that well. Usually the way it works out is we can do it pretty well with some of the six painful emotions, and then there are some of them that just eat our lunch. How do we bring up our children to be joyful? It helps to have a real clear idea of what we're shooting at. So what do we have to do? Well, we've got to build belonging, right? We've got to, and how do we do that? We do that by, one of the best ways to build belonging is to share joyful experiences with one another, to communicate appreciation, to look in each other's face and go bright. When's the last time you looked at your child, your teenager, looked in the face and went bright-faced with them? That should be happening every day. That should be happening with our teachers every day with every student, multiple times. They should be looking in their faces and going bright-faced with them. We should be communicating appreciation to our children and having and teaching them to communicate appreciation. What are you grateful for? That's actually a lovely question to ask around the dinner table. And now here's the key thing. When I ask that question, I'm not asking what is the list that you could kind of go check, 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 right answer. Now, what is it that you can remember that when you think about it, it brings a smile to your face? That's what you appreciate. And I sure hope that there are a whole lot of things in your memory that when you pause and you go back and you think about them and you really remember them, it kind of brings a smile to your face. And if we could get our children to be practicing doing that and asking them about that, it could be an orange. It doesn't have to. And the bigger events, the Disneyland things, usually don't accomplish that. They get the thrill centers of the brain, but they tend not to get the deep satisfaction centers of the brain. So, the 8-year-old might, what might bring a smile to her face? Remembering walking hand in hand with dad down the path. That's much more likely to accomplish deep satisfaction than riding the log ride in, some water park. Different parts of the brain you're going after there. Thrill centers versus deep satisfaction centers. And we've been sold a bill of goods. We spend too much time trying to hit the thrill centers of the brain and not the deep satisfaction centers of the brain. So we need to kind of build in our homes the kinds of things that are deep satisfactions. Got to build security, which means we got to tone down the anxiety. I mean, it's, if a child comes home and dad asks this question, how'd it go in the school today? And son or daughter perceives through in dad's face anxiety, immediately that will trigger anxiety in the child. And immediately the child will scan for some negative event to write a story to explain the negative emotion. And then dad and child start bonding, negatively bonding over an anxiety event. And there may have been 20 wonderful things that happened at school, but the relational dance triggered an anxiety bonding. On the other hand, if a child comes home and says, tell me what the dad's really just peacefully interested. Tell me what you appreciated about school today. You get a totally different dance around the same day. One, you're building anxiety. The other, you're building joy. Same exact day, different dance. Perceived security. And we have to have built-in time for real fruitful work together. That's one of the things we do at school. I mean, the children need to regularly be producers of good work because that's part of who we're made to be. And we need to be facilitating that at home. And then we have to build the skills. Capacity for shared joy. We do that by actually engaging and sharing joy. Every time you engage and share joy with your child, you're building their capacity at it. Every time you engage anxiety in an anxiety bond with your child, you're building their capacity for that. Because you're running over certain neural networks and strengthening those networks. And fundamental law of neuroscience, Hebb's law, neurons that fire together, wire together. So the more firing and wiring of anxious neural networks, the more hardwired they become. The more firing and wiring of joy-based networks, the more those get hardwired. All right, so we need to build the other skills to manage. And the best way you can't impart what you don't possess, so the best thing we can do is to be working on our own capacity to manage each of the six painful emotions, because whatever our capacity is what we will pass on to our children.
Ambleside Schools International fosters an educational renewal based upon the pedagogical insights of British educator Charlotte Mason. Serving an international community of parents, teachers, and schools, Ambleside makes a living education accessible to all. A living education empowers students to live lives rich in relationship to God, self, others, ideas, work, and creation. For additional information regarding Ambleside Schools International and training opportunities for principals, teachers, and parents, please visit our website at ambleside schools.com.